All right, now we're going to talk to a real doctor. Okay, this guy has like DR in front of his name. All right, Dr. Chris Palma from Penn State. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Talking about astronomy stuff. When did it was a year ago or something we had you
That's
on.
Right.
It was around the eclipse.
Yes. I remember the exact date because eclipses are so rare. So April 8th, you all had me in. Like, I think the weekend before or the week before to just let people know how to observe that safely.
Okay.
And then
it turned out to be a big bust.
Well, you know, we did what we could do. Yeah. Some other places it was really cold.
Cloudy, you know. It's like, oh, that didn't work. Now, you and I bumped into each other a couple of weeks ago at the Bellefonte Art Museum, where I had heard, I guess for the summer, that there was a pretty cool exhibition of astronomy photography, mm-hmm. right? And I think it's still there. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So the museum tries to, every summer, they get a little bit of local funding to put on an art exhibition where they change the theme every year. And so about 5 years ago now, one of our students did something on astronomy for them, and it was a big hit. So she ran through a couple of other things and came back to me and said, astronomy did well, would you be willing to do it? And I said to her, absolutely, because I think, you know, from an art perspective, like I do astronomy, I do science for a living. I spend an awful lot of time like looking at obscure images and making measurements. But a lot of the stuff we study is also just beautiful. People will go to the arts festival and buy a print of an astronomical object and hang it on their wall. And so it is really interesting to me how the science and the art are related like that. And so I said to her, if you're okay with it, I'll try to show a range of, like, here's some images that come out of the biggest telescopes we're able to build, but then I'll also show some images that were taken by people who live locally, who do this for fun in their backyard. And so I tried to mix up all of those things. And people so far, again, there's a lot of interest in astronomy as a hobby. People have been showing up at the museum and been giving us lots of great feedback about it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. This, I believe it runs through the end of the month, right? End of August. So it's still there. Now, the museum is not open every day. Do a web search for the Bellefonte Art Museum. Find their hours. I mean, some of those photos, Chris, were just like, whoa. I mean, what's one that just sticks out for you from that exhibition?
Yeah, I'll mention one by a local guy who actually local. He's in Williamsport. I don't know if you all are familiar. There's a park about 2 hours away from here called Cherry Springs.
Yes.
It's known to be the darkest site in Pennsylvania. So people who love astronomy will drive 2 hours to get to this park to experience the really dark skies. And he took an image through a very small telescope of an object called the Veil Nebula. It's the remnants of a dead star. It probably blew up thousands of years ago, but it just looks like these very thin filaments that are, some of them are red and some of them are blue. And again, it just looks like art. And then to realize that with a few hundred dollars investment in some equipment, you can take this beautiful picture and hang it on your wall. So it's called the Veil Nebula, and it was taken by a gentleman named Bob Stoffergen from Williamsport.
Wow. Cherry Springs is on my bucket list. I've driven through Cherry Springs a bunch of times with my old job, this simple little two-lane road that goes to Cowdersport.
Yeah. Yep.
And I drove through, but it was always in the daytime.
And it's also just like the eclipse. If you want to make a trip out there to see the beautiful dark skies, you want to go about 1 week a month when the moon is either not up or only up during the day. And then you need to get it right where it's both a moonless night and a cloudless night. So I've been there 3 times and it's been cloudy twice. So if you watch the weather, just pay attention that if you're going to make that trip, that you're going to try and hit it when it's clear.
But on a clear night, what do you see there?
Yeah.
What do you see?
I mean, this is one of the things I love to teach about. Like, next time you're just outside in your backyard, you're outside, look up in the State College skies. State College is pretty good for the size of community we are, but you might see at first a dozen stars. If you're out late, it's midnight, some people have started to turn their lights out, maybe you see 100 stars. if you live maybe not right downtown, if you live, say, 10 miles outside of State College, then you could see 200, 300 stars. You go to Cherry Springs, you're going to see 2,000 stars. And not only are you going to see 2,000 stars, we can't, unfortunately, most of us live in a place where you can't see the Milky Way anymore. So this beautiful band of, like, faint, fuzzy light out in Cherry Springs, the Milky Way is so bright. Now, this I didn't experience. They told me. On their absolute best nights, the Milky Way is so bright you cast a shadow on the ground. Whoa. From the light of, and we can't even see it here, right? So it's people go there specifically just to see thousands of stars and to see the glow of the Milky Way.
Wow. See, I live in Penns Valley, and I've lived there for a long time. Right now, I cannot see the Milky Way.
Yep.
I can see a lot of stars, but I can't see the Milky Way. I swear, 30 years ago, I could.
Yeah.
Now, it was kind of faint. Yep. I mean, maybe there's a picture in the exhibition of the Milky Way, like, whoa, look at that.
Yeah.
It was never that vivid, but I could see it. Now I can't.
Yeah. And that's, honestly, that's the thing I tell people about more than anything else, is that, if you think about our generations, right? Like, so our parents could see the Milky Way whenever they went outside, pretty much anywhere, and just, I like to joke around, there's just so many gas stations. Think about every gas station you go to and how bright they make it, right? So we've just built, we all have security lights, we all have gas stations in our neighborhood. No offense, I know y'all are huge Penn State fans, just like I am. One of these days I'm going to have a talk with James Franklin about how much they leave the lights on in Beaver Stadium.
How about that?
Because it's lights like that. Like during a game, during the day, I totally understand. But at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., do we really need Beaver Stadium's lights on as bright as they are? And it's things like that that make the sky so bright you can't see the Milky Way. Huh. And even better is there are some organizations out there trying to talk to folks. You don't have to do a lot. Like, it's not like we want to tell everybody, don't build lights, don't put lights where you need them, but just shield them. Like, you could, like, if you are thinking about putting, like, a security light on your house, buy one that has a little metal shield so it shines all of the light down and it doesn't let any of the light go up.
Oh.
It saves you money because it's cheaper if you're only lighting up down. And by not letting any light go up in the sky, it's going to help us see more stars, see the Milky Way even better.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't even think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just turn all the lights on.
Yeah,
I've never understood the stadium thing. Is it something to do with airplanes? Like, they don't want an airplane to fly into the stadium or something? I can't imagine why they would even do that.
I'll tell you what I heard, and this makes total sense to me, right? Like, so if you think about operating that stadium, that's not a simple job. They have to turn the lights on for, you know, just think about the construction work they're doing now. They need lights on for, and it's not like in your house where you just flip on the switch. Like, if they turn the lights on, that's a big endeavor, and you can't just turn them on, turn them off like you would the lights in your living room. So that's the explanation I've heard. And hey, I don't want to get in anybody's way, but I just want to encourage them to think about it, right? Like, if you could leave the lights off overnight, it would help us see the sky.
We don't need to do any Penn State marketing between midnight and 6 a.m., for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, some of the undergrads pay attention to those times.
True enough.
I'm not going there, all right? Anyway, general question.
Sure.
I don't know, what's hot in astronomy right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Definitely the question that people ask us more than anything else, and the one that a lot of Penn State folks work on, is, are we alone, right? Is there life out there? And that idea is called astrobiology, right? So the idea of, we know there's living things here. Can we figure out if there are living things elsewhere? And so you and I talked a little bit about the James Webb Space Telescope. And when we build a telescope like that, we know we're going to discover some things we never knew before. But we also go into it saying, we're going to build a telescope that has the chance of answering some big questions. And that was one of them they wanted to answer.
Yeah.
Could James Webb Telescope detect evidence that there are planets out there like Earth? And so that's a really hard thing to do, but we're getting better at it. And with this amazing instrument, we're just barely starting to get some evidence that maybe there are some livable planets out there.
What is evidence?
See, yeah,
this is where I get confused, because yep. we're looking at this, the Webb telescope, I'm just transfixed. I mean, the photos are incredible, and it's a million miles out there, and it's amazing. But it's looking at things that are light years away, and we can't really see them unless yep. it's like a yep. pinprick of light. How do we know that there's life on that, whatever it is over there? How does the tell?
That's a great question. So I'm going to give you the answer.
Okay.
So one, it's challenging. So that's why people get a degree in what I teach, right? Like, yeah. come do 4 years with us for an undergrad and then 5 more years for your PhD, and I guarantee you, you'll understand it. But it's hard work. But it really is built on things we've known how to do for hundreds of years, right? So some of the stuff that Isaac Newton discovered is what we do every day. So have you ever seen a prism, look through a piece of glass, and yeah. you see light turn into the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet? So that's basically our bread and butter, spreading out the light from those teeny tiny little pinpricks of light. So if you can get what's called a spectrum, you spread out the light, there's every object has like a fingerprint in its spectrum. They're all unique, and their spectra are all a little bit different. And we spend all our time decoding those, right? Like, so let's look at the spectrum of the sun. Let's look at the spectrum of the Earth. Let's look at the spectrum of Mars. And we know that Earth and Mars are different. So we look for like what's special about Earth and what's different about it from Mars. Then we point our telescopes at distant objects, and we compare their stars to the sun and say, okay, is that star similar to or different than the star, than the sun? And if they have planets, and if we can get a spectrum, that's the thing that's really, really hard to do, we're trying to start comparing the spectrum of the planet to Earth. We're looking for, are there signatures in that planet spectrum that are similar to the things that we only find on Earth? But here's the thing. Now, if I told you I found evidence that this distant pinpoint of light had signatures that said it was like Earth, is that enough to believe
yeah.
that there's stuff living there? Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you said yes, because I was waiting for you to say no.
I don't, you know, like we are allegedly finding, oh, that planet has water.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, how do we know that? It's like a bazillion miles away or something.
Because so you look out the window and you see the clouds in the sky. If you took a spectrum out the window, you could tell that there are clouds in the sky, because there would be fingerprints in the spectrum of water vapor. Right? So water vapor, if there's no clouds in the sky, there's no water vapor in the spectrum. If there are clouds in the sky, there's a lot of water vapor. And so we can see that in distant objects. We can tell by their spectrum if there's water vapor in the thing we're looking at or not. And so again, that's the best evidence we can come up with. Like, I can't tell you, oh, I'm looking at a picture and I'm seeing living things. That's not what we get. We get some indication that there's water vapor. There's other gases that are only emitted by living things. So like the trees, all the plants, they're producing oxygen. And the only reason Earth has so much oxygen is because the trees are continually replenishing it. So if we saw that same feature, if we saw replenished oxygen in the atmosphere, we could guess that there's plant life. But it really is an educated guess, and it really is. We're trying to put together a case of like evidence that says everything tells us this planet is like Earth, and we haven't found one yet. But we're getting closer. We're really getting closer.
Okay. We haven't found one
yeah,
yet.
Yeah.
How many planets have been discovered by this point?
Yeah. So 20, 30 years ago, it was only in the like handful, and we've gotten really good at that. We're at sort of 6,000-7,000 planets we've discovered around other stars, but that's just knowing they're there, and then being able to actually characterize them and tell what they're like. That's the thing that we're just now being able to do. So the last 30, you can characterize, like, the last 30 years has been the discovery of them, and hopefully the next 30 years will be, now we're finally good enough to tell what they're made of.
Okay. Wasn't it like 30 years ago, wasn't it a Penn State
yep.
person? What was that again? I can't remember.
Yeah, so this was one of those things where for years and years and years, people wanted to be the first person to discover a planet around another star. And one of he just retired. He just moved away from State College. His name is Alex Volshin, Polish astronomer. The funny thing is, like, one of the things people like to point out, because he's from Poland, they put his face on a postage stamp because he was so famous for discovering the first planets. But he did it by accident. So 91, 92, he was studying these weird stars and found a weird signature in how they were moving, and the only way to explain it was that they had planets going around them. So the very first planets around another star weren't around a sun-like star, they were around a dead star, and discovered by Alex Volshin of Penn State.
Wow, that's pretty cool. He just retired, you
yeah,
said, huh?
Just last year. We had a big party for him.
Right. All right, hidden planets. Planet Nine. Allegedly, we found it, or we haven't found it, or way out there beyond Neptune or someplace. What the heck's going on, Chris?
So, and I love this too, because I mentioned Isaac Newton already, right? So, look at how objects are moving in space. So, the moon goes around the Earth, Earth goes around the sun, Mars goes around the sun. Isaac Newton is the first person who really sort of explained how that worked, and it's what we teach. If you're a freshman taking physics, you're going to learn all the physics you need to know to understand why does a planet orbit the sun. And so if you see an object that's supposed to be going around an object in an orbit and it acts funny, there's only a couple of ways that can happen. Something else must be pulling on it, and that something else... If there's something else pulling on it, it's got to be visible in some way. And so that's where this idea of Planet Nine came from. There's a couple of small objects very far from the sun that are moving in kind of a weird way. And so when the people who discovered them noticed that they were moving strangely, they said the only way this works is if there's a big planet really far away that's pulling on them. And they've spent the last 10, 15 years looking for it. There's always a Penn State connection, which I think is fun. One of my friends, he did some research using this telescope to rule out. He basically said there's no way there's a Jupiter mass planet within a huge distance from the sun. There's no way there's a Saturn sized planet within so far from the sun. And so he could rule those out. But the group that just claimed they think they found Planet Nine says they think they found a Neptune-sized planet that's about 700 times further away from the sun than we are. So if you take Neptune and you put it that far away, it's almost impossible to see. And so they've made the first claim that they think they've seen it. It's going to require other people to go and point other telescopes and verify it's actually there. I'm pretty excited, though. You know, we stopped calling Pluto a planet, so we went from 9 to 8. Now, if we really verify this thing is out there, we're going to go back to 9.
My friend, Mr. Ironhead.
I am not happy about the Pluto demotion. It still upsets me.
My wife tells me I'm pretty good at convincing people like that it wasn't actually a bad thing. I mean, it's still there, and that's why I say it's still there. It's still awesome. It's a different class of thing. We found other things like it, and so we just don't want to call it a planet anymore because it's more like these other things than it is like Earth and Mars.
Explain that a little bit.
Sure.
Because when I was a kid, it wasn't like, we think this could be. It was,
it
this is.
Is
the ninth planet.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit just about sure. The different classification for it.
So the planets that you grew up with, like Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, they all orbit sort of by themselves. There's not too much other stuff. There's a few sort of little things. But when we discovered Pluto, the reason it was called a planet, it was predicted to be there. So that was thing number one. And it was the only thing we found outside of Neptune. So that was for 60 years. We did not know there was anything else. And then starting between 92 and 2003, people started finding not just one or two or 10, but thousands of other things out in Pluto. So you know how we talk about the asteroid belt?
Yeah.
Right? So there's actually another belt out beyond Neptune, and there's probably hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of icy objects out there, and Pluto's just one of them. So its properties are a lot more like those things than it is like Earth or Mars or Venus. And because it's not like the big thing is, like I said, Earth sort of orbits the sun and there's not too much else. Pluto orbits inside this belt. So we sort of came up with a name that we call them Kuiper Belt objects. It's named after a guy. And it's more like the Kuiper Belt objects than it is like a planet. So and that's the thing, like, people thought that it got destroyed or it got ejected. It's still there.
Poor
it's
Pluto.
Yeah, it's still as amazing as it ever was, but we just found other things. And there's actually, it has almost a twin. That was really the key. There's another object in this belt that's almost exactly the same size and has almost exactly the same properties. And that was the thing that we said, well, it's not just it's in this belt, but there's things almost exactly like it in the belt.
All right. We'll take a break here in a moment. Now, these guys, they've seen this mystery planet. They've seen it.
A dot in a picture.
Oh, it's a dot again. All right.
Yep.
But it's decent size. What did you say? Neptune size.
Neptune size.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. Bigger than Earth.
Okay. So we need more people to point their equipment and, oh, there it is. Oh, there it is. And get multiple people to say, oh, there it is. And then we got it.
And watch it move. And so we know that it's actually a planet orbiting the sun.
Hmm, okay. All right. All right. We're going to take a break. Dr. Chris Palma from Penn State's our guest. When we come back, I'm going to ask about this, whatever it is that's going through our solar system that the aliens are doing a flyby. All right. And he's laughing. He thinks this is funny. Some people are taking this very seriously. All right. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Flocks. All right. The alien flyby when we come right back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Hey, honey. What you doing?
Getting the camping gear ready to go. Got the tent, air mattress, sleeping bags.
Hey, babe. I was thinking.
Oh, boy.
Don't you want me to be a happy camper?
Sure. Happy wife, happy life.
It's time to look at campers. I mean, let's just check them out. Let's go to Bill's Happy Campers in Mill Hall. Bill's Happy Campers has a great selection of new and used campers. I mean, they have great names like Catalina, the Legacy Edition, Trailblazer, Summit, Cedar Creek, Riverstone.
Sounds like you've already checked out Bill's Happy Campers.
I have. Look at their website, billshappycampers.com.
Wow, they're really nice. You put the camping stuff away.
Gladly.
Bill's Happy Campers, 15 North Water Street in Mill Hall. Open Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, 8 till 6, Wednesday and Friday, 8 to 5. And make sure you visit them at the Center County Grange Fair. Bill's Happy Campers. You'll leave a happy camper because customer service is their top priority.
Our military heroes deserve our thanks. Patriotic Hearts is there to assist those in need, especially in the transition back to family and civilian life. You can help by donating an unwanted car, truck, SUV, or van. Your donation supports the programs that make a difference in the lives of veterans and those actively serving our country. Call today for a fast, free pickup. Your donation will not only be greatly appreciated, but will also qualify as a tax deduction. Call 800-917-1544 to help our military heroes. Call 800-917-1544. Operators are standing by 24/7. Patriotic Hearts, helping our soldiers and veterans live a better life. Call 800-917-1544. That's 800-917-1544. Together, we can make a difference.
Are you looking for the best pizza in town? Look no further than Brothers Pizza in downtown Belfont. Good, fast, and did I mention really good? Brothers Pizza also delivers to the immediate area, but you can also enjoy sit-down dining with convenient on-street parking. For fast, friendly delivery, call 355-5581 or stop by at 102 North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfont. Brothers Pizza, downtown Belfont.
Have you checked out our new website, 987thefox.info? When you do, be sure to scroll to the bottom, enter your email address. Then sometime soon, you'll be a 987 The Fox Insider with our newsletter feature, thoughts from some of our hosts that you won't get on our shows, messages from sponsors, and even special deals as an Insider newsletter exclusive. We'll take good care of your email address, no sharing or selling. Hope you'll join us on 987thefox.info and enter your email address at the bottom. Be an Insider, only from 987 The Fox.
Interest rates and inflation are out of control. Is your credit card debt also out of control? It's time to resolve your debt and take back control for a lot less than what you owe. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, then you need to call us right now. Debt Fix Pros can significantly reduce the amount you owe, and you could be debt-free faster than you think.
I knew we had to do something. Our debt was growing.
It was getting out of control, and we just didn't know what to do.
We saw an ad for Debt Fix Pros. We called, and they showed us how fast they could get us out of debt.
It really was amazing, and now we're back in control.
Call now, and we'll show you how easy it is to fix your debt. The call and consultation are free. Call Debt Fix Pros right now. Call 800-930-0388. That's 800-930-0388. 800-930-0388.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand Multi-Force stand-ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Let's Talk is the program. Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox is the radio station. We will have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of today's big show.
We'll see how much time, because I'm geeking out. All right, I'm having fun.
All good.
All right, Dr. Chris Palma from Penn State's with us. Now, you folks have what, an observatory? Or talk? Can regular people go there, or is it just for Penn State people?
Only for irregular people. Yes. No regular people are allowed.
Irregular. My wife would agree that astronomers are irregular people. Yes and no. So we do have an observatory. So our building is Davy Lab. We're right across the street from the hub. And if you're ever just walking on campus, you can tell our building because it has the three white domes on top. So we do have telescopes here. And years ago, before COVID, we tried to open every Friday night. We tried to have the telescopes open. But again, we were joking around with it right off the bat. As you know, the weather in State College is not really conducive to astronomy. So let's say we would try to hold 10 open houses in a semester. We would get a clear night, one or two of those 10. And so since COVID ended and we're trying to open things up a little bit more than they had been for a while, we decided instead of trying to open all these times and canceling 80% of them, let's try to be a little more strategic about when we open. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to open at least once a month on a Friday night, and if it's open, it's usually 8:30 until 10:30 or 11, and always has been open to the public, free. So for the fall semester, we haven't posted our dates yet, but we're going to try and pick a date in September. We always do Parents and Families Weekend at Penn State, so we know for sure we'll be open October 18th, and then we'll try to do a date in November, and then December is always tricky because of the weather, and then the holidays coming in, so we're not sure we're going to open in December, but we always put on our website, like the main Department of Astronomy and Astrophysics website, we have a page on stargazing, and we tell people if we're going to be open on a given Friday night, and then it's just open to anyone who'd like to look through the telescopes.
Is there an easy website address for your website, or is it
One of those big long ones. How about I send it to you after we're done, and if there's an easy way for you to get it out.
All right.
That'll work.
Yeah.
Is there anything if you have a telescope at home or even at Davy Lab that is like specific to the winter months versus the summers? Is there anything that like, all right, yep, this is the time, only time of the year here where you're going to be able to check this out?
That's a great question. So, right, we're coming up into fall and winter. So right now, still the things we see in the sky, we would call them, it's the summer sky still, and it'll slowly change into like November and December. So there's two really great targets in the winter. The Orion Nebula, which people have probably seen, it's a beautiful cloud of gas, and then the Pleiades star cluster. So So I always joke around with people. Do you know anybody who has a Subaru? So you know the front plate of a Subaru has stars on it? That's the Pleiades star cluster. So if you want to see the group of stars that are actually on that car, you can see them in the winter sky. And even, you know, if you have a pair of binoculars you take to the football games, those are good enough to see the whole thing. They're really great to look at the moon. So any night the moon is up, which is all year round, it's definitely worth it. But in the winter, I would tell people to try to look for, it's called the Pleiades star cluster. It's pretty easy to find because it's near the constellation Orion, and even people who don't know the stars that well at all, usually the first thing people can find is the Orion constellation.
Yeah, the belt.
Yep.
Three stars in a row, which are nowhere near each other, correct?
Yep.
Those three stars are not even close to each other.
You are absolutely correct.
Just in our view, it looks like one, two, three, like they're right next to each other. Okay. All right. There's something flying through the solar system from outside. It's going to keep on going and go wherever it goes. And, of course, we all know that's where the aliens are, and they're taking a look at us. What the heck is this thing?
So it's great because, like I was saying before, it's to me, the thing I love about this is, you know, astronomy, sometimes people say, like, I'm not so sure I can understand astronomy. It's a lot. The universe is so big, right? But it does boil down to some pretty basic ideas in science. And the most fundamental one is that, like, if you're a planet, you're going to follow a nearly circular orbit around the sun. And so the Earth has just been going around the sun over and over and over again. So every once in a while, we see things that instead of following a nearly circular orbit, they're going so fast that their path is curved, but it doesn't close and make a circle. It's just a short arc, basically. And so to do that, it's got to be going really fast. So if it was going slow, it would make that nearly circular orbit. But if it's going so fast, it's just going to pass through and keep going and never come back. So people predicted that should happen. There's stuff out there in space that's moving fast enough. Something like once a year, once every 10 years, something like that, we expect something to go through our solar system. About 10 years ago now, we found one. It was going about, Earth moves pretty fast. This thing was going about 20 times faster than the Earth. And so when we looked at it, it turned out, like everything in space, it's just a rock. it's a big space rock. It's moving really fast. So it was interesting. We followed it until it left the solar system, and it's never going to return again. And people have been predicting the same thing. We should see more of them. We found another one. And so most people said, oh, it's just a rock. It's moving really fast. But like you said, the alternative idea is if something is moving really fast, it could be made by intelligent beings, right? And so every time something like this is in the news, there are people who will say, how do you know it's a rock and how do you know it's not, you know, the Klingons? And I will say, astronomers take that idea pretty seriously. Like, we actually say, okay, that's a valid point. Is it a rock or is it something made by intelligent beings of some sort? You should be able to tell the difference, right? A rock should look like a rock. And so all of the evidence I have seen, this thing that's moving really fast, in a lot of ways, this one doesn't look entirely like just a rock. It looks like a comet. So a comet, like if you say, what's the difference? A comet has more ice. And so when comets get near the sun, they heat up and they start to release gas and it basically trails behind. So, you know, like, I know it's summer. We don't even want to think about this. You know, on those really cold, snowy days when the snow starts to melt and you can see, like, a faint haze, like, hanging above the snow, that's what comets do. Okay. They get this, like, faint haze, and we can see that. So we see this thing going really fast, has a faint haze of ice melting, and so it's a comet. But there's one kind of famous astronomer who's like, no, it's not a comet, it's a spaceship. And he's been making a lot of waves by telling everybody that this thing is a spaceship and it's not just a random rock.
Guy from Harvard.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
I guess is pretty well known.
Yeah.
And he's done this before.
Yep.
Now, I didn't get a name, but one of your colleagues had an online posting essentially saying this guy's full of it, or
It's turning into like a little bit of drama in the community, unfortunately.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So the guy in our department, his name is Jason Wright, and he's one of the folks that I would say studies this stuff seriously. Like, he takes the idea that there are intelligent creatures in the universe seriously. So he's been trying to come up with, can I convince someone that we have found evidence that there's intelligent life out there? So because he studies that, some of the work he has done, people have called him up and said, hey, I heard you discovered aliens. Tell us more about it. And he's like, it's not aliens. I'm trying to find them, but I'm showing here's the thing we found that we thought could have been aliens, and here's how we figured out it wasn't. So he's very much approaches it from that point of view. And the person from Harvard, he jumps right to it's aliens. And so the two of them are butting heads a little bit. And in particular, I would say that the guy from Harvard, his name is Avi Loeb. He really does seem to be like, I don't want to be mean to the guy. I don't know him. I haven't met him, but he does, like you said before, he's done this before where if there's something going on that has captured people's attention and it comes up, it could be aliens. He goes right to it definitely is. Whereas most of us say, we doubt it is. Let's take it seriously. Let's try to figure it out, but it probably isn't. And he, I don't know why, but he really enjoys. I think he wants to be on TV. I think he wants to be on the radio. And I think saying it's aliens gets him on TV.
We know for sure that it's not like a super powerful Klingon on steroids, like just skipping these rocks through the universes.
Yeah, those are two. That's the thing. Like, you could come up with that, and you could say, "How do we rule it out?" And that's science, right? Like, if you have an idea, even if it sounds bonkers, like, is it some Klingon? You should be able to come up with a way to tell the difference between Klingons shooting something versus the universe just making a rock go really fast.
How many things out there, like, let's just say within the Milky Way, anyway, are inexplicable. Like, we do have UFOs. I don't know that they're, but I mean, it's just like truly an unidentified man. That was a flying object. We don't know what it was. And again, there's all kinds of explanations for that. But how much is pretty much everything that we're seeing ultimately, okay, well, we have a pretty good, I mean, maybe not 100%, but yeah, this would explain what we're seeing with the telescope.
So I've been doing this for a while now. I've been in astronomy. I think I can safely say I've been doing this for 30 years now. And every once in a while, something like that comes up. This thing is weird. We've never seen anything like this before. But people have been doing astronomy for hundreds of years. We've figured out what a lot of things are. And so even when those weird things come up, it usually takes a year and someone's like, oh no, I figured it out. Here's what, it's a weird example of this one thing we really know about. So the weirdest one was actually the one that, Jason Wright, the gentleman that you brought up, I don't think he discovered it. He was part of a team. He was looking at a star, and stars sometimes, they vary. Like, the light from a star, it gets faint, then bright, then faint, then bright, then faint. And so a lot of times that's the star pulsating. The star actually gets bigger and smaller, so we can explain that. Sometimes stars, their light changes because something passes in front of it. So there's lots of reasons why a star could get fainter. But about 10 years ago now? Maybe 8 years ago, a star was seen changing its brightness in a way we had never seen before. And that was the one. It's a star. It was discovered by a woman named Tabitha. And so people call it Tabby Star. And for a while, that was the most weird thing out there. And one of the possible explanations came right out of Star Trek and science fiction, right? So there's this idea of what's called a Dyson sphere. You can imagine super technologically advanced aliens that can build really big structures they could build something around their star. And if they built it big enough, as that thing passed in front of the star, it would make it look fainter. And so one of the ideas was that this star was surrounded by what's called a Dyson sphere, an intelligent civilization built artificial thing that was blocking the light from the star. Turned out not to be, but that was one of those weird things that we could not explain for a while.
Huh. All right. We have a couple minutes. Here's a quick one.
Yeah.
We have a way to detect asteroids that are flying in all directions. There was an experiment with a rocket, I don't know, a couple of years ago that hit one of these things. If we determine, if somebody discovered today, okay, here comes an asteroid comet, it's headed right for us.
Yeah.
With no shadow of doubt, like the dinosaurs or something. Could we actually right now do something about that, or are we toast?
I don't know if Bruce Willis is struggling now. Yeah. I don't know that we're going to be able to.
He's in a bad way.
Yeah. You
know? Bruce was, oh man, thank God he was able to save us that one time. So that was what that mission was all about, right? So we want to know, could we do this? So here's the problem, and I don't want to make people nervous or anything. If you found something and it was headed straight for us, and you found it when it was really close, and we only had a month, if we had a month, we probably, there's not much we could do. But we're studying these things, and we're watching them, and we're trying to find all of them. And so we're trying to find them early enough that we have a couple years of notice. And if we have a couple of years of notice, that was what that mission was all about. With a couple of years notice, we could build something, send it up, have it impact the thing, and it just knocks it off course just enough. And they were successful. They actually took a rock that was moving in one orbit, and they hit it just hard enough that they changed its orbit. And that would be enough to take something that was potentially going to hit Earth and make it miss.
So we could actually do it.
We could.
We don't need Bruce Willis and a nuke or
something. He is safely retired.
Good.
I can safely retire. All right, final question. All right, and anytime the federal government's involved, I'm skeptical. Are we actually going to put people on the moon and Mars like in the next 5 years?
Wow, that's a great one. People want to do it.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing that's amazing to me is I mean, that's dangerous, right? And people are lining up to be the first person to do it the first person to land on the moon in decades now. The moon of the two, the moon is easier because it's close.
All right.
Here's something we can't do yet. Like, if you volunteered tomorrow and you said, I want to go to Mars, if we put you in a rocket ship and sent you there, there's so much high energy light coming from the sun, you'd arrive fried. You would basically be dead. So the thing we have not been able to invent yet is a way to shield astronauts so during the trip to Mars they wouldn't get irradiated to the point where they die. So that's a problem no one has solved yet, but people are working on it because people really do want to go there. So I would not say 5 years, but maybe 30. I wouldn't be surprised if there are people going there. And it's really because people want to do it. And if people want to do it, they're working on, can we figure out how to get there, how to live there, how to keep ourselves safe while we're there? I wouldn't be surprised.
30. I don't know if I can last that long, Doctor. We need the Vulcans to show up.
Yeah.
We need the Vulcans to pull in. Okay, guys, we'll help you out. No big deal. Well, hey, thank you very much.
Sure.
It's just a fun conversation.
It is amazing.
If somebody does a web search for, like, Penn State Davy Lab, probably...
Stargazing. So if they look for Penn State Stargazing, they should find us.
Okay, that's easily done. Penn State Stargazing. All right. And, yes, I've got to go to Cherry Springs. That's bucket list. I've got to get up there sometime. So, hey, thanks again.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Interesting conversation.